Well, we've got 1 minute after, almost 2 minutes after. So it's my privilege to present Mei-Ling Wong Squires, who's the head of the mechanical support department here in the accelerator division. And Mei-Ling is also the leader of our robotics working group effort. And we have a couple of the other members along as well. And Mei-Ling is going to tell us a little bit about the robotics and a little bit about Spot. So, Mei-Ling, take it away.
Thanks, Paul. Hello, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and pull up my slide.
Two cookies.
Okay. So I was just, could I also ask everyone to mute themselves? Be distracted. Okay, so hello and welcome to the talk on the Accelerator Division's Robotics Initiative and the SPOT project. So like Paul said, I'm Mei-Ling Wong Squires, and I'm here today to talk about the Robotics Initiative, along with Noah Kerfman and Adam Watts. The three of us are part of the team that is working on the initiative. So I'll start off our talk today with an overview of the initiative. Noah will then introduce SPOT and discuss how its features will be beneficial to accelerator work. Adam will then just explain how we use SPOT to survey residual radiation in the tunnels. And we'll then open up to questions and hear any ideas that you might have in how we can use SPOT or how you might want to use SPOT. So, but first a little history. The use of robots and robotic devices to maintain the accelerator and target systems goes back many years. Robots have been built in-house or commercially purchased to meet the unique operational needs associated with the accelerator. They've provided visual data, made repairs, and surveyed radiation in a number of the machines. Currently, there is an area that uses telemanipulators. Targets are autopsied after they are taken out of service in order to learn about radiation damage effects to materials like graphite and beryllium. The targets require 1 year of cool down before they are autopsied due to the high level of radiation. But even at the time of the autopsy, they are still radioactive at around 1 rem/hour at the surface. For this reason, workers are unable to disassemble the target by hand, so telemanipulators and cameras must be used. Currently, the telemanipulator and a set of automated tools are used to remove the end flange of the target and hold a camera for the purpose of diagnosis within the target. So not only are robots cool and fun, but robots that are used in tunnels and target areas can lead to increased worker safety and increased operational efficiency. So here I list a small number of tasks that robots can do to help us. And the robots all lead to really a lot of great benefits. This is the motivation for finding ways to use robots more often. And it's this motivation that has led to the formation of the Accelerator Division's Robotics Initiative. Our mission is to demonstrate how robots can support current and future beamlines in order to enhance personnel safety and increase operational beam time. We use exploratory projects to investigate advanced technologies and innovative techniques. A multidisciplinary team of AD engineers, engineering physicists, software developers and technicians are all involved in this work. So our collaborative experiences in accelerator operations, control systems, engineering, and robots have steered us to these four goals. We are currently focusing our efforts on the first goal of using remotely controlled robots for diagnostic purposes. And when I, to clarify, our we envision someday being able to remotely control the robots actually through the accelerator's control system. The foundation of our efforts centers on the need to develop a balance of in-house expertise with commercial solutions. We recognize that from a practical standpoint, we will not have the large amount of time to build and maintain only robots that are designed and built in-house. On the other hand, we do not want to buy an army of commercially built robots and then depend on the vendor to maintain those proprietary systems or have to buy expensive upgrades. So there's a need to have a balance between the two approaches throughout the initiative and beyond. We are also establishing a working relationship with our safety colleagues. We develop work practices based on ESNH guidance and learn alongside with them on safe practices when it comes to using robots. As we gather these best practices, we envision creating a FESHM-like chapter on robots. And we also envision a training course that people can take in order to become certified to operate a robot. So this collaboration with ESNH will be ongoing with each new device. Our initial in-house efforts have common features, as you can see here. They're varied, but all of them explore the use of low-cost hardware like Arduinos and Raspberry Pis. They use open source designs and open source code. And some of them have even used rapid prototyping of parts using 3D printers. The coolness factor of robots makes it easy to attract to attract students to help us explore other projects and other ideas. For 2 years, senior engineering students at the University of Illinois in Chicago have worked with Katsuya Yonehara to develop a 3D radiation mapping system using a quadcopter. This can be used to accurately survey and map the varying radiation levels of a spent target as it is being moved. By identifying the locations of spikes in radiation levels on the target, workers can adjust their procedures to remain safe. Noah Kerfman and Rob Ridgway worked with another group of UIC students to explore the idea of a robot that can collect radioactive dust in the tunnel. Chris Anderson and Adam Watts worked with CCI summer interns to design a long-reach robotic arm. The goal is to place this arm on a robotic platform and provide the ability to inspect hard-to-reach areas. We are currently learning how to remotely communicate with a commercial industrial robot that traverses in a tunnel, namely our SPOT robot. Our efforts will establish a foundation of tools and technical requirements for SPOT and any future robots in the tunnel. We begin by using existing and installing new Wi-Fi capabilities. This effort is also a part of ACORN's 5G research and development program. for those of you who don't know, ACORN is a program in AD that is, it's an effort to look towards designing and implementing a modern accelerator control system. And there's some R&D that is part of that program. And one of the studies is the study of 5G feasibility in the tunnel. So as we in the robotics initiative learn and plan next steps for how to remotely control a robot through the accelerator control system, we pass along our insights as contributions towards developing functional requirements for the modern accelerator control system. So that is a little bit about the robotics initiative, and I'm going to pass it along to Noah to tell you more about SPOT.
Thanks, Bailey. So I think most people I talk to about robotics kind of agree that some sort of mobile platform for, you know, tunnel operations could have some interesting applications at Fermilab. But a question I get a lot is, why SPOT? You know, SPOT is a pretty complex, pretty expensive robot. Isn't there something cheaper out there that could do this? And there certainly are. But interestingly, from our perspective, SPOT's amazing mechanical abilities are not actually its greatest strength. So what Boston Dynamics has provided with SPOT is a robot that has a better set of documentation and software that comes with it than even simpler solutions on the market. So what this is great for is, you know, a lot of the people that work on these robotics projects are not full-time software developers. They're spending a small portion of their time working on the project. And so having a single platform we can develop for that can work in a lot of scenarios that's really well documented is a huge time saver and a huge strength to being able to look at a lot of different use cases quickly. So what's so great about the SPOT robot is Boston Dynamics has its SPOT SDK, which is a public GitHub repo that anybody can look at. And so this includes examples, documentation on how all the programming works, and a really good API that allows you to do really advanced robotic functions with very simple Python commands. So the result of this is that pretty much anybody that has even just a little bit of Python programming experience can start writing applications for SPOT right away. This is a huge contrast to other off-the-shelf commercial systems out there. Most of the time, other commercial systems are gonna say, you know, we're selling you a hardware package, software is all on you. And beyond this, Boston Dynamics has done a really great job documenting the interfaces for developing custom payloads for SPOT, and they have a really great support system around the robot. So we've been working with them pretty continuously. They respond very quickly. Whenever you have a problem, they're happy to work with you. And through their Knowledge Center, they have a plethora of troubleshooting, setup guides, and other resources that you really don't find with other robotic systems. So while SPOT is amazing, Boston Dynamics' greatest triumph has really been their software and their support. And it makes the cost of SPOT really worth it in terms of the development time that you save. So two huge functions that are really critical to accelerator operation of mobile robots are localization, finding out where you are in the tunnel, and avoiding obstacles. You need to know where you are to take any kinds of readings relative to where you are. And obviously everyone is concerned about a robot, you know, bumping into things down in the tunnel. And those are two things that are typically really hard to integrate on a mobile robot, but you get both of them out of the box with SPOT. So down in the bottom left there, you see SPOT sitting next to what look kind of like QR codes. And they are, they're a special kind of QR code called April tags. And SPOT can use its cameras to look at those and determine where it is in relation to them. So with SPOT, it's as simple as saying, you know, one or two lines of Python code, and SPOT will look at these tags and tell you exactly where it is within pretty good accuracy. Additionally, obstacle detection that's included with SPOT works at all speeds. It works from all angles. It takes into account the envelope of any payloads on top of SPOT. And all of the parameters for the obstacle detection can be tuned really easily through the SPOT API. So another effect of having such well-documented hardware and electrical interfaces for payloads to SPOT is that there's a plethora of options available for off-the-shelf items. So Boston Dynamics sells solutions to problems that are really simple, ranging from port breakout to IR cameras to full-blown robotic arms. And you can certainly develop solutions to a lot of these problems yourself, but having the ability to actually trade a little bit of money for development time down the road gives a lot of flexibility towards development. With other robotic systems, that's not something that's really possible. You know, if you're buying a platform from another company and you want to add a robotic arm to it, there's probably not, that same company probably doesn't sell the arm. You know, you're probably working with an integrator or designing it yourself or talking to another company. Additionally, a lot of companies have actually started developing third-party systems for Spot that you can buy off the shelf. And so the idea of, again, you know, just being able to buy a solution to a problem off the shelf rather than having to develop it yourself or contract it to another developer is really exciting. And while it might not be for every solution, it gives you a lot of flexibility in how you approach problems. Next slide, please. So the disadvantage of course, this incredible mechanical ability and you know this really well-documented software and support package is that Spot does come with a high initial cost. And for everything you buy with Spot, you're going to get nickel and dimed. You know, batteries are expensive. Payloads from Boston Dynamics are expensive. The caps for every port are expensive. But the advantage you get is such an incredible reduction in development time that it can, you know, really pay for itself. Now, another downside with Spot, you know, we talked some earlier about open source functions. Most of Spot's lower level functions are closed source. It's locomotion, it's obstacle detection, things of that nature. And all their hardware is closed source, which certainly brings with it some replacement challenges, which is very different from, say, the platforms you see over here on the right, where they're using very common components that you can find off the shelf. If something breaks, you can probably find it and replace it yourself. But these items over here on the right are really just selling you a hardware package. And they're saying it can be used with ROS, which is the robotic operating system. So ROS is an open source project. There's a ton of open source code available for it. But like any other operating system, if you could go to the next slide here, Mei-Ling, or the next click, ROS has many different versions, and there's many intricacies between all these versions. And so usually what ends up happening is you say you have obstacle detection code that might be written for ROS Noetic, but your localization code is written for ROS Kinetic. And it's almost a full-time job to keep up with these discrepancies and integrate all these softwares together and refactor things. And ROS itself is a tremendously complex system. It works really well if you are doing this full-time, if you're a professional software developer. But for someone that just spends a little bit of their time on robotics, it's an incredible investment to learn how ROS works and how to integrate all these systems. And that's required with almost every wheeled platform we've been able to find on the market. Boston Dynamics Spot is pretty much the only platform where all these low-level functions, these really challenging problems are already solved, and they're solved in an accessible way that almost, you know, let anyone get up and running with the software. Next slide, please. So another thing to point out that's a big limitation with Spot is this is a complex electrical device, and it's going to be vulnerable to radiation. So what we want to say right off the bat is Spot should not be thought of as a high radiation area inspection device. You don't want to be running this down into a target hole. You should sort of think of Spot as either a development platform for future high radiation inspection robots or as a final production use case for lower level radiation environments. You know, if something is damaged on Spot, where you have to work with Boss Dynamics to replace it, and that's certainly tricky if things become activated. One thing that is pretty exciting is Boss Dynamics has told us they're really excited about using Spot in accelerator applications, and they want to help us work through some of these issues. Spot is also in use by a variety of nuclear customers, and we have some anecdotal data, at least, that says that Spot can take radiation levels well and above of what we'd see in the tunnels for short-term times. Now, of course, damage to cameras, things like that is going to be a concern, but we hope that by limiting Spot's use to relatively low radiation areas, we can extend its life for a very long time. We're also working on developing PPE. You know, booties of all kinds are pretty common to see on Spot in many media. And we're also looking at working with a local college to work on sort of a set of coveralls for Spot that would further reduce the impact of, you know, contamination and radiation. So I think at this point, we can load up the video and look at a little bit of Spot's capabilities in action, because pictures are great, but seeing it run around some tunnel enclosures provides some really great examples of how it can be used. So we shot a little bit of demo video in an unused enclosure at Fermilab just to try and put Spot in some, you know, beamline areas. And I think that's, you know, most of the environment that we're thinking about right now is running Spot through beamlines. So right here, we've got Spot mounted up with an inspection payload that includes a pan zoom and tilt camera on the top, 360-degree color camera, some high-intensity lighting, and a couple other interesting functions. So at any time during Spot's operation, one thing people are very concerned about is what happens if something goes wrong. So if Spot encounters a network fault, a control fault, or an emergency stop is pressed, it'll just sink to the ground like this. Motors don't shut off instantly. It tries to do a controlled drop to the ground. So this is sort of e-stop behavior. And it's constantly looking for a signal. If it doesn't get a signal, it does this. It's looking for a heartbeat, a two-way signal between the controller and Spot itself. So in this demo, we're actually attempting to run Spot into this case on purpose. And the obstacle detection is preventing us from all directions. It's pretty amazing. We've got the obstacle detection tuned so that we're getting Spot as close as possible to the object. We're at full speed right now. And you can see that pretty much from all angles, we can't run Spot into the object even if you wanted to. It's extremely robust, and the ability for Spot to change directions quickly makes things like that pretty easy for the system to, you know, if you're going to run into something, it can avoid it quickly. So this is a little demo of the high quality camera on top of Spot. The camera has a 30x optical zoom, so it can be pretty useful for inspecting components far away. So the video link here is a little slow, so it takes a minute for the video to stabilize, but you can see, you know, you could pretty easily read these gauges on this collimator a very, very far distance from Spot with this camera. So for things like in-tunnel inspections, it could be pretty useful. So this payload also has a color 360-degree camera, as I mentioned. The cameras on Spot that it uses for navigation can be viewed, but they're black and white in a low quality, just enough for navigation. So this provides a nice color view. You can have a panoramic view down at the bottom, and then a view at the top there that shows your selected image. So Spot can move up and down to account for a variety of scenarios to get in and around different components. It's pretty mobile. And the other great thing with this is it can position and point cameras and payloads at things. So where other robots, you might need a gimbal to position your camera, Spot can just do it with the body itself. And it actually takes into account the weight and the center of gravity of payloads that it has mounted on top of it when it's doing these motions. And it adjusts all of its actions accordingly. And it'll actually calculate that all automatically. So you can even just put a payload on top of Spot, run a calibration sequence, and it will figure out all the logistics for you. And kind of a cool little detail, you'll see these flashing lights on the side of Spot. Those are infrared emitters that it's using. I believe they're infrared for, you know, sort of doing obstacle detection around it. But those aren't visible in person, but you'll see them on video here. So here's a little demo of, you know, an accelerator component inspection. Say we want to look at the front side of this bellows first and then the back side. So we walked up to it, we looked at it here. This is a quick look at what the cameras built into Spot's body look like. You can see they're pretty low quality, black and white, but might be useful for some quick inspections if you don't have that payload, that inspection payload mounted on top. So if you wanted to get to the back of the beamline here and you tried to walk under, Spot is aware of the size of the payload and won't allow, it won't traverse under that piece of conduit there because it knows that it would run into that camera payload. So here you can see same thing, the payload prevents Spot from going into this area. By lowering the platform a little bit, you can get underneath and walk back. And so when we were driving Spot through here, the distance between these steel stands and these concrete blocks is almost exactly as wide as Spot. And the only reason we're able to get Spot into this area and then back out again is because of the obstacle detection. So if you had something like a wheeled platform that didn't have obstacle detection, I think you would almost, I'd almost guarantee you'd be running into these objects. So while there's a lot of concern about, you know, Spot has these appendages that are kicking and they could really damage things, the ability to move in all directions and the robustness of the obstacle avoidance really makes it actually sort of more capable in scenarios like this than a more simple platform might be. So Spot does work best at sort of its medium stance. That's where it can travel as fastest, but it can stand up higher and lower by quite a fair margin, as you saw previously. So here's a demo with Spot sort of walking next to a collimator here to show off some of the lighting capabilities of the inspection payload. So the spot does need a certain level of light to operate. So having some amount of lighting is important, but if you're in an area where there's burnt out lights or whatever, you're next to a collimator in this case, spot can turn on that light to provide better navigation and better inspection picture. I don't recall the exact lux value, but it can go down to pretty low lux. So it doesn't have to be brightly lit. One cool design of spot's mechanical aspect is all the motors are contained up near the hips. So it can actually walk through quite deep water without impact. So the entire lower legs are just a solid piece of plastic. So certainly a puddle like this is no problem. And Spot could even go through deeper water than this if necessary. The robot itself is rated for reasonable dust and water protection. You wouldn't want to throw it in a pool, but walking through a little bit of water or, you know, being outside in the rain is totally fine. It's a pretty robust industrial system. So Spot weighs about 70 pounds. It's a two-person lift, but it's really not that heavy, all things considered. It's got a 30-pound payload capacity. So the payload we showed in the previous clips there was maybe 15 to 20 pounds, and it was using the front payload port. So there was still, you know, a fair amount of payload capacity available, and then that rear port that it could also interact with. This is Spot's top speed you see right here. This is all operated manually, but everything that you've seen so far and everything that you see in this video can actually be automated with Spot's, the software that comes with Spot. It's very easy to do. But this is all just controlled via that controller you saw earlier. And it's just, it's a little slower than a fast walk is what I would say. So this was kind of a cool example. It's a little hard to see in the video, but we intentionally had Spot walk into some of this track that was on the ground. And it's able to sort of notice that and get its foot out of the track pretty easily without any issues. And in general, we've been really impressed with Spot's ability to go over surfaces that we were almost sure it was going to trip up on. So those rails are one we were certainly concerned about. We've also tried using Spot on sort of loose gravel. That's sort of its biggest weakness, Boston Dynamics will tell you, is graded floors and loose gravel or like an icy surface. And it will actually adapt to some surface conditions very well. And you can also change the gait to sort of a lower stance if you're worried about it falling. There's a variety of different gait scenarios that can give you more stability in areas where you're concerned. You can also change the perception modes to work in some areas a little better. So for instance, these are a set of graded stairs. Grates are very hard perception challenges for robots. And so not only can Spot go upstairs, it can also go up and move through these graded areas when it's in the right mode. It does need to be in a special stair mode to do this, on a special graded mode for graded floors. So there is a limitation to the type of stairs that Spot can climb. If they're too steep, it's very difficult. It always needs to be facing up the stairs when it's climbing, whether it's going forwards or backwards. So for instance, the stairs coming down in this enclosure were not quite standard. They were quite steep. Spot probably would not be able to successfully make it up those stairs. But anyway, that's a quick demo of some of the capabilities of Spot in an accelerator environment. So I hope you guys enjoyed, and I will be happy to answer any questions about this at the end of the presentation. But I think for now, I'm going to turn it over to Adam here.
Thank you, Noah. Thank you, Mei-Ling. All right, so we've introduced what Spot can do. Now let's talk about some of the work that we're starting to do on Spot. As Noah mentioned, we're doing this sort of in our spare time. That's what the robotics initiative is. But we're starting to make really good progress on applications. So spotlighting our first application project, we're going with something that's fairly ambitious, but relatively straightforward, and that's attempting to automate radiation surveys, the type that the ESNH RadTechs do before supervised access, for example. So there are a lot of benefits to trying to do this. We want to develop a custom payload and data acquisition system to automate these sort of surveys, not job specific surveys, but the routine ones. And this is with BeamOff. So we want to reduce the dose that our technicians get. Let Spot take that dose so they don't have to, Alara. We're not trying to take anybody's job away. That's a general statement with the robotics initiative. What we're trying to do is work with people to identify tedious or hazardous tasks that we can automate with robotics platforms. So radiation surveying is a good example. We want to free up the radiation technicians to use their expertise in for higher value tasks, whereas the routine surveys can be automated. Again, if there's a specific place or a specific issue, that's where your RAD contexts are really valuable. One of the benefits is that if we can digitize the survey results at high resolution and include photographic images, we have a much larger wealth of information for troubleshooting and noticing patterns, maybe even training neural networks to notice anomalies in the data. So by digitizing this information, we can pack a lot more data into our surveys. We also want to, now that you're digitizing the data, we want to attempt to quantify the estimated systematic errors so that we can provide error bars or confidence intervals in the data. We can say, here's the dose at this point, and here's our confidence interval, plus or minus 1%, something like that. That can only be done with repeated measurements with systematic analysis. So there are a lot of challenges in getting this to work, as I'm sure you're recognizing already. Number one is precise location awareness of spot in the enclosure. Noah talked about how spot has a built-in location service that uses April tag fiducials. I'll show on the next slide here in a second what we're envisioning for that and what we're testing. But we need to know how good that is. How precise is that location? You know, if I'm in the main injector, am I looking at the dipole that I thought I was, or am I actually a couple dipoles away? That's important when you're doing radiation surveying. We are going to be taking quite a lot of data from several different sources that needs to be synchronized, analyzed, and stored in a safe and guaranteed integrity sort of way, right? We really want to make sure that what we're measuring is what we say we're measuring. So we are working with our colleagues in ES&H to understand the very stringent standards that our engineers have to follow for their instrumentation and their surveys so that we can try to meet or maybe one day exceed those very stringent standards. Our goal is to work with them so that our survey data can be considered official. That is a long road and ambitious goal, but that's what we're looking toward. And finally, in the long term, SPOT has the ability to be automated in where it goes. So, in the short term, we'll be driving SPOT manually and really putting these systems we develop through their paces. Eventually, this could certainly be automated. So there's a long road ahead of us and a lot of benefit that we can discover with this project. And I just want to say that I want to acknowledge the main injector group's DALE project. So they've been working toward more automated radiation surveys as well. And so we're learning a lot from them and kind of working in parallel, but we're coming at this project from a different perspective. So it really is collaborative. Next slide, please. So this is this little cartoon shows what we have thought of conceptually for how we're going to do this and how we can start coming up with each subsystem, run it through rigorous testing and prototyping before we work on integration. So long road ahead of us. If you look on the right, this cartoon shows a top-down view of spot in a accelerator enclosure, say main injector, for example. And it is using April tag fiducials. Noah showed those. They're really just QR codes. So they're passive. They can be printed and put up on the wall. At specific locations, spot can use the cameras to localize with those fiducials to tell where spot is in the tunnel. And then using its sort of proprietary location service, follow the environment as it moves between April tag fiducials to make an estimate of where it is between them. So that's how we do tunnel location. And I'll mention on the next slide how we want to actually put that through its pace and see how precise that actually is. We will have a custom payload I've mentioned that will hold a radiation survey meter provided by ES&H. So well calibrated on a calibration schedule, well understood ES&H. That way we've got a better chance of saying we understand the integrity of this data and it meets the standards that they are requiring. A stereoscopic camera, this can provide photographic evidence, right? Every radiation data point, if we compare that with a photograph, great. That can reduce some of the ambiguity of, well, that's a hot spot. What actually is that? You could take a look at the photo. These stereoscopic cameras also provide pixel by pixel distance information. So we can think about normalizing the dose to the distance between the detector and the device under test. I'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. And finally, digitization electronics. So the radiation survey meter that we're working with ES&H to procure will put out some sort of signal like an analog voltage that we'll be digitizing to then log and do analysis on. And those electronics need to be well calibrated, routinely calibrated, and understood. All right, next slide, please. Okay, so measuring systematic errors. This is one of the selling points of this project, that maybe we can go a bit beyond what the radiation surveys look like right now because we're digitizing the information. But that requires a lot of stringent testing. So I mentioned that we want to try to use Spot's fiducial system with the April tanks to tell where it is in the tunnel. The big question is, well, how accurate is that? Luckily, we have an alignment and metrology department at Fermilab that are experts in this sort of thing. So we have developed, I should say Noah and John Anderson have developed this payload that you see here in the picture, the gray payload on Spot's back that can hold three tooling ball nests for the alignment metrology group to shoot with their laser tracker, as well as some holders for laser pointers I'll describe in a second. The idea is to develop an experimental test where we walk Spot around in a controlled environment and using the programming API and the April tags, ask Spot, where do you think you are in this local coordinate space? And then compare that to what the alignment metrology group measures. So we have a much better understanding from that test of what the systematic errors are for the localization system. Another source of systematic error is the distance to the accelerator component, right? We always talk about dose at a foot. rather than making sure that you're always a foot away from your device under test, we can precisely measure that distance and normalize. So one way to do that is to use a laser pointer and a stereoscopic camera in software to find that laser spot on the device under test, zoom in on those pixels and grab the distance sensor information from those pixels. Now you know precisely what you're pointing at, the distance to that device under test. Finally, the radiation survey meter. Since we're working with ESNH on procuring that device, what device they would recommend, they will provide something that they can calibrate the way they normally calibrate that can provide an analog voltage output. It's up to us to digitize that in a way where we can control and understand the systematic errors and calibrate those digitizer systems. So they've been very helpful in showing us what ISO standards we need to work toward and follow, and some advice on how we can go forward with that. I think that's my last slide. Back to you, Mei-Ling.
Thanks, Adam. So I just wanted to say thank you to everyone here on the meeting for listening to us share about Spot. As you can probably sense, we're really excited for this robot's many, many capabilities. For it to be able to navigate through the tunnels and then the initial task of automatically surveying radiation. So working with Spot has already helped us to start establishing technical requirements to control it remotely. And this has helped the AD Robotics Initiative work with ACORN to define functional requirements for a modern accelerator control system. So I invite you to come check us out. Here's a link to our website. And we now actually would start to open up discussions with the group in general. We've already, of course, are thinking about future things that we want Spot to do, and also to think about maybe future robotic teleoperations applications. Adam has mentioned, someday to be able to have robots do automated tours of the accelerator. We could imagine robots as part of this automated tour, collecting data of a variety of types, whether it's radiation or audio data or visual data, and then taking that data to train artificial intelligence neural networks to detect anomalies. We can also see Spot being used beyond the accelerator, whether it's taking radiation data on the berms, or making sure or doing reconnaissance trips of confined spaces, or assisting the fire department's response. And then maybe even further into the future, we can imagine using Spot or other robots to do some sort of telemanipulation. Either we can develop manipulators that can use human tools, or we can engineer systems with robotic manipulators in mind for maintenance and repairs. And so we're thinking of, you know, can maybe a robot can help us do vacuum leak checking someday or repair water leaks. So just wanted to, open up to the group and love to hear from you. Maybe you have other ideas, or maybe you have questions and comments of what we presented today.
Have any questions or comments for Mei-Ling?
Hi, Mei-Ling. Just a quick question. It was just about the battery power. Can you comment on Trinoa maybe about when Spot goes down in the enclosure? You know, have you tested it to see if it can go around the entire? Would it be able to go around the entire ring, or how long would it last?
That's a good question. So it does depend a lot on what you're doing, because Spot is such a dynamic robot, you know, how much it's carrying. But we haven't tried running it all the way down, but Boston Dynamics spec is about 90 minutes of walking. And we did calculate it early on when we got it, and we figured we might be able to make it around the main ring, but it was going to be close. One thing that is nice is that, I think we could make it around the main ring. I'll have to double check. Spot does come with a dock. So for instance, you can actually dock the robot and charge halfway through, which is certainly not great if you're trying to do everything in one shot. But if it was a more relaxed survey, you could do half the ring, stop, charge for a few minutes, and then get up and do the rest of the ring. And it does also have the ability to swap batteries pretty quickly. So you can also just put in a new one. But about 90 minutes is sort of the average runtime.
Thank you.
Static, you're next.
Hey, nice job, nice presentation. A quick question, do you imagine the ability to mount an arm on this on Spot such that it could take contamination wipes on surfaces?
I'll field that since I talked about the RAD survey. Good question, Rich, yes. But for contamination wipes, you know, we're sort of doing this project because it's very ambitious in stages, right? Step one, get the data acquisition working. Step two, get Spot going around the tunnel. So I think working with ESNH, I'd be interested to see if that's a service they think would be valuable, if they prefer to do that themselves. But in terms of technical feasibility as a maybe second order or third order addition to the project, yes, that's something that we have talked about. And just adding manipulators to Spot in general is a later goal of ours for a lot of different tasks.
Greg Drennan. You're up.
Maybe I'll pick on Adam. Has someone come up with a calculation between millirem and the accumulated dose that the robot would be able to take, and the cost of the amount of time you'd be able to have the robot in service?
That's a great question, Craig. I think a lot of that's going to have to be experimental, because not a lot of people are driving Spot to failure in radiation environments. So the shorter answer is no, we haven't quantified that yet. But I will say we've thought about, you can sort of guess what components are going to fail first. And in talking with Boston Dynamics engineers, they sort of agree with us that, you know, it's probably going to be the cameras that start to show damage first, the CCDs. And that's a part that can be changed. So I think experience is going to show us, we can start to build that information. And in the short term, as Noah and Mei-Ling mentioned, we're not going to be parking Spot in high radiation areas. He's going to be breezing past and grabbing data automatically. So we are putting some, we do have a Spot on the dosimetry badge service, so we can keep an eye on how much dose it's getting over time. And that's something we'll be collecting to sort of postmortem. If we see something fail, okay, let's look at the data. Did we go somewhere unexpectedly hot? Can we start figuring that out?
Adam, get him a dosimeter too.
yeah, I think that's the idea.
Luciano.
Yes, thank you, Adam. Thank you, Mei-Ling. Great presentation. I have a couple of questions. So one is, well, besides doing the stairs, I thought, you know, a wheeled robot would have been just fine for the purpose of going around. But yeah, it was really cool seeing the Spot going on the stairs. And the second question is, Have you tried to trick it? Does it have, like, say, ultrasonic sensor for an obstacle? Can you put a mirror and see if there is a reflection that he get confused or stuff like that? Is it, how easy it is to trick? Of course, you can trick it, but how easy and how far can did you go with hacking?
We've been a little hesitant to break our new expensive robot, so we haven't pushed it to failure yet. But they do mention reflective surfaces are potentially an issue. We did get a bunch of traffic cones with reflective stripes on them and attempted to run Spot into them. And it didn't hit the cone for the most part, but on a loose gravel surface, running it into this reflective cone from all areas at maximum speed, you can get close to making it fall and stumble. And that certainly is a possibility. So it uses a variety of sensors. So it uses cameras, and I think I mentioned infrared, and I believe a few other sensor types. So it's reasonably robust against some items like that, because they'll have some sensors that'll have issues in those situations and some that won't. But we haven't gotten it to fall over yet. We haven't gotten ours to fall over. We did test drive a Boston Dynamics model that we did get to fall over by running it over a beach ball.
And does it have also ultrasonic backup, say, or that you know can be affected by, say, high pitched noise and so on? Does it?
Not that Boss Dynamics has told us, but I'm sure there's a possibility for something like that. Let me just add ultrasonics. I'm not sure that this one is.
I don't believe it is. Let me just add, number one, Spot can't actually get up after falling over. That's not a feature we've played with. In fact, it's a fairly new feature, but it is possible. Number two, to your point about a wheeled platform, a lot of what we're doing with our payload development, we're trying not to be exclusive to Spot, right? If I develop a radiation mapping payload, Mei-Ling showed Rover and Marv, we have wheeled robots. We're sort of highlighting Spot, but if I develop that payload, I should be able to put it on Rover. And you know, yeah, I might be missing some of the location features that Spot can do, but hopefully it's not wasted effort.
Well, plus you can carry more than 20 pounds.
Exactly. Yes, that's right.
Meeting?
I'd tell you a
presentation. Cindy Joe.
Yeah, hi guys. That was a really excellent presentation. Really enjoyed it. I've got a bunch of like short questions, so hopefully that's okay. One was that anybody who has spent much time in the tunnel, like with a hard hat, knows that like static from the hard hat and any plastic kind of like collects radon like crazy, right? I know that you talked earlier about coveralls and things like that to try to keep off dust. A plastic robot is, I guess, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't think we've talked too much about it, to be honest, Cindy. And we've taken Spot into the tunnel once. You just saw our first sojourn down into the tunnels, and we didn't have a problem. But one trick that I learned as an operator, I know you learned it, is that you can try to ground out the plastic first, so you don't have a lot of static you're bringing into the tunnel. But that's something we're gonna have to figure out. Luckily, those panels are replaceable. So if we do have issues, you know, we're not down on an entire robot. But that's a good point. We're going to have to see what happens.
Yeah, I told this to Adam privately in the chat, but I am interested in any and all robot couture initiatives and would be happy to try to get involved with that. Other questions that I had, communication. I guess I was thinking about, and now I'm talking about communication with people. So I was thinking about how like those Ring doorbells, you can like see people and you can talk to them like through a speaker. Can you do that with Spot? Can you like have Spot go up to somebody and give them a message?
Yeah. So we didn't showcase it in the video just because we ran out of time, but the inspection payload that has the color cameras and the lights on it has microphones and speakers built into it. So you can both play audio recordings and talk to people remotely. And it works pretty well from our testing. So it's already built into the payload. It's great. We didn't have any great clips to play on there though, to throw on the video this time.
I'll just add that part of us working so closely with ESNH, if any of you, when we have a train class and you take it, and you look at the RWP for operating Spot that we're developing, working on updating Fesham with ESNH. One of the things is we've decided, you know, operation of spot within 6 feet of a person is unacceptable. So we already have a safe zone around them. Even though it has great obstacle avoidance, you see videos of Boston Dynamics testing that with people, we decided to have that extra buffer. So we are not in the short term looking to operate spot in the vicinity of people if there were unexpected people. It's kind of like a secure Cindy. If there are unexpected people, we may pause the job, rethink, talk to people involved. But yeah, we could say hi through the robot if we wanted to.
Yeah, I thought about the secures a lot, Adam, while you were talking about that. But I obviously, with you and the others on board, I was sure that was well covered. And I guess another idea, I mean, it sounds like you don't plan on running Spot like autonomously in any way. It sounds like you would have a person driving them around. I guess I was thinking also about facial recognition and whether that would be useful in any way, but it sounds like you kind of answered that question with you're not at this time planning on interacting and with people or like needing that kind of interaction.
Yeah. So in the long term, we think automation of the radiation surveys is very practical, and not just radiation, but you could imagine getting video and photographic, maybe even audio imaging from the tunnel, training a neural network to look for anomalies in that. And you would probably do that as a first thing, right? You turn off the main injector, send Spot down to do a circuit, then you let people in. So that's long-term, right? Getting, having the main injector group let us put an autonomous robot in their tunnel. We got a lot to show to show that safe. But that's something we've talked about in the long-term. In terms of facial recognition, it's an interesting point. It's something the AI group is talking a lot about. We are considering the effects on privacy and ethics on that sort of thing. You know, once you start doing facial recognition, how's that data being handled? Is it anonymized? Who's using that data? A lot of big questions there. So we're going very, very slow with every new feature we consider with Spot to make sure we're doing it correctly.
Great. I know that there's other people who want to ask questions, so I'll stop here. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Brian, you're up.
Hi, thanks for the talk, first of all. I had a question about, so when you said that you were planning on having Spot behave autonomously, go through a circuit, do whatever Spot was going to do, do you plan to incorporate, I guess, a capability to be able to communicate with Spot while he's in the field, maybe change instructions or things like that? And if so, do you have an idea of maybe like how many communication nodes you would need, like how close together they would need to be in order to reliably be able to communicate with Spot?
I'll take a crack at this. So it's going to depend on the communication medium, right? We talked about, right. Mei-Ling mentioned 5G. One of the projects that Acorn is also involved with is, you know, looking at radiating cables as distributed antennas in tunnels. That could either be for Wi-Fi or 5G. So those are sort of parallel paths, right? We know we're going to have robots. We know we're going to want to talk to them. But what mechanism we use is sort of up for grabs. Luckily, Spot's a pretty general purpose computer. As long as you have a USB dongle, you can communicate with whatever medium that you want, more or less. Mm. But one of the big concerns with the 5G project was, you know, I could buy a really expensive repeater and put it right above a beam line, and then you turn the beam on and that thing's dead. So radiation protection of the communication equipment is a big concern, and that's going to inform what kind of technology we use. Early days.
Yep. All right, cool. Thanks.
Okay, do we have any other questions out there? Maurice.
Yeah, actually, one more question. Adam, did you say that that Spot cannot get up if it falls down?
It can. Yeah.
It can.
We haven't tested that.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay.
I don't think it does a backflip or anything, but yeah, it can stand itself up.
It can roll over now. They added that in the most recent firmware.
They're teaching it new tricks.
Do you have any other questions out there? If not, I'd like to thank Mike, go ahead.
Just real quick, are there any discussions with the far site of what this robot could do? I know this is probably a step 30 in your plan, but anything in South Dakota that it could do for the far detector?
I think I'd like to let Mei-Ling answer this. All I'm going to say is this was our debut. This is us saying, give us your ideas. We've been working with this robot in secret, not in secret, but we've been thinking of our own ideas, holding workshops. We want to hear from the wide community about applications, and then we start chipping away at them. So good point.
Mike, we haven't, but if the folks out at the Farsight want to buy a spot, we would welcome working with them, you know, sharing what we've learned and, cheering them on. That's a great idea.
Cindy, you got your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I know that you spent most of your time on Spot for obvious reasons, but was there anything really quick that you guys wanted to tell us about the other guys, Rover and Marv and so forth? Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I meant, we didn't have time to say this cool thing.
I know with Rover, you know, most of our time right now is spent on Spot because it's exciting and people are excited about it. And it gives us the opportunity to learn a lot. But I know I can speak for Rover in that it's still useful to us in that, you know, we don't want to run Spot into a high radiation area, but having some sort of robot that you can do that with would be great. So there are plans to sort of retrofit maybe with some interns this summer, Rover's camera system to be a little bit more useful and update it and, you know, add some additional features to it with really cheap hardware that's basically just throwaway stuff. So you can, you know, drive it right up to a focusing horn or something and then throw the whole thing away and start over for not much money. But I think that's the only plans that are ongoing for Rover at the moment.
Thanks.
Kennedy.
Thanks. I missed the beginning of the presentation. Is there a smaller profile, shorter one, on the 6-inch range? I mean, somebody asked about Farsight, but Nearsight, one of the things for our new decay region is we specifically built the ability to inspect underneath the new decay region. And, you know, our concept was, you know, borescopes, all things like that. But does the manufacturer have, you know, a lower profile apparatus that's readily available?
A Boston Dynamics robot?
It would be more a squattier track one, almost like the Robot Wars robots, you know, that's what I'm thinking of.
So Boston Dynamics doesn't make anything simple, unfortunately.
Okay.
But the one that Cindy mentioned, Rover RVR, is a little track platform that we have an AD that's just a very simple track platform right now with a GoPro strapped to it, which might be closer to what you're looking for.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure the folks in Beamline would be very interested in it once, you know, they start thinking about operations in mass. But just to bring it home to here at Fermilab, that, I mean, we were realistically talking about just that. Have you found any robots that do climb ladders? Because the other thing we have to do is get on top of our decay region. And it's kind of like being in a hobbit hole, you know, not to mention fault protection. So.
Kennedy, I can I can jump here and say that what we're showing is Spot because it's a very sort of targeted glimpse at what we're working on. But our long-term goal is to build up more in-house experience, right? The mechatronics engineering is already done for Spot, which for me is kind of a disappointment. There's plenty of other projects that we're trying to build experience on. And one of the things that we want to do is work with people like you to get a list of requirements. You know, what problems are you trying to solve? And hopefully eventually we can have our own sort of robotics laboratory where we can say, okay, here are solutions we've worked on embedded in the past. Pick a few of them together. Here you go. Here's a custom solution relatively quickly that can do specifically what you need. Because what you're describing, you know, a wheeled robot would be really great for low profile inspections. Climbing a ladder is much more challenging, but maybe you can get creative with that rather than buying something off the shelf. As Mei-Ling mentioned, there's a balance between developing in-house specific solutions for the really weird stuff that we do at Fermilab and buying something off the shelf.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Great. Send us those requirements. That's an interesting application.
I see Carl. Can you make it short, Carl? We've got another talk coming up.
Okay. It was, short. Having been down in the tunnel as a technician many, many years ago, I know there's some wonderful jobs down there, such as stacking bricks in hot areas, lead bricks. Is there any look for the future as being able to do some of that grunt work in hot areas, or is this just more like a recon now and see what can develop?
I would say, as you put it, early stages recon now, see what we can develop. But you know, I wouldn't put something like Spot in a really high radiation environment, as Noah suggests. I would use a simpler custom platform that, if that thing dies on the job, you know, we're not heartbroken, but it's specific for that task. So definitely thinking about more ways to reduce the dose to our personnel. It's just right now we're taking baby steps.
Okay, and on that, we will close this out. Thank you, Mei-Ling. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, whoever else I've missed on all of this, Noah.
Thank you, Noah, yeah.
So thanks to all, and I guess you can stay tuned. We've got another talk coming up right after this. Matt, I'm going to leave this in your hands. I have to go over to the other talk for a minute, and then I will come back.
Okay, no problem. Thanks so much, Paul.
I think I'm listed as the moderator on this, so I'll give a brief introduction. Matt Hollister has been at the lab just a few months shorter than myself. He's been here coming up on 6 years this summer. He's an applications physicist who specializes in low temperature cryogenics. He's worked on a variety of projects and in a couple different divisions now at the lab. Specifically, he's focused on dilution refrigerators, which is going to be something needed in the new division. And he will tell us more about that. So on that note, I'll let Matt jump into his talk and then answer any questions afterwards.
Okay, thanks very much, Luke. Hopefully everybody's having a good engineer's week so far, and I'd like to extend my thanks to the EAC for the invitation to talk to you this afternoon. I must admit the spot rolling over would be quite impressive. I can only get 50% of my dogs to roll over, so he's already a step up on that one. Okay. So